The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the Blue Cliff Record, case 98. John Ping's travels on foot, the pointer, collecting the causes, producing the result, completing the beginning, completing the end. Face to face, there's nothing hidden, but fundamentally, I have never explained. If there's suddenly someone who comes forth and says, all summer we've been asking for instruction, why have you never explained? Wait till you've awakened, and then I'll tell you. Tell me, do you think that this is avoidance of direct confrontation, or do you think it has some other merit? To test, I cite this to see. The main case. When the master of John Ping was traveling on foot, he called on Ziwan. He would also say, do not say you understand the Buddhist teaching. I cannot find a single person who can quote a saying. One day, Ziwan saw him from a distance and called to him, John Ping. Ping raised his head. Ziwan said, wrong. Ping went two or three steps. Ziwan again said, wrong. Ping approached. Ziwan said, these two wrongs just now, were they my wrongs or your wrongs? Ping said, my wrongs. Ziwan said, wrong. Ping gave up. Ziwan said, why don't you stay here for the summer and wait for me to discuss these two wrongs with you? But Ping immediately went away. Later, when he was dwelling in a temple, he said to his community, when I was first traveling on foot, I was blown by the wind of events to Ziwan's place. Twice in a row, he said wrong, and tried to keep me there over the summer to wait for him to deal with me. I didn't say it was wrong then. When I set out for the south, I already knew that it was wrong. The verse. Followers of the Chan house like to be scornful. Having studied till their bellies are full, they cannot put it to use. How lamentable, laughable old John Ping. After all, he says at the outset, it was regrettable to go travel on foot. Wrong, wrong. Ziwan's pure wind suddenly melts him. All of these wrongs. Koan training is a lifetime of wrongs. I remember Chosen Roshi talking many years ago about all of her years of studying with Mizumi Roshi and doing koan training. And when she, as a pediatrician, she would be called as a court's witness on behalf of children who'd been abused. And she said her koan training was indispensable for helping her to deal with the lawyer's attacks of her credibility and her report, that she was able to withstand all of that because all of those years she'd gone in and faced her teacher and been wrong. This week we did this session a little bit differently, where we each day created, during the sessions of sitting, spaces where everyone could go and sit, smaller numbers, different places, some outside. And this is something that teachers have been talking about for a while. We've done different things over the years, different kinds of intensive sitting. And for me, it was part of a ongoing sort of inquiry into, you know, on Monday night I said, when the Buddha was enlightened and he's got this Sangha gathering, it's like, what do we do? What was he teaching his students? What do you, you know, they're drawn to his teachings, but okay, now what do I do? And so he taught the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. When we gather together intensively, during Sesshin, during Anga, what do we do when we gather together? What do we do with this day that we have? What do we do with each day of this week? And not just what are the things that we do, practices, sitting, walking, working, eating, but what are the fundamentals of practice that we're trying to cultivate, strengthen, discover? Because those practices that we're doing are coming from that, We're not just doing random things to fill up the day. It's like, what are the essential aspects of practice at any time, but particularly when we gather together to practice intensively in silence, that are at play? What are the things that we bring in that we are going to have to meet and struggle and wrestle with and try and free ourselves from? And what are the elements of the Dharma, our own qualities, our inline virtues that we're trying to awaken and strengthen and bring forth? And then how do we bring that together in a time and place? Because we're in a particular time and place, right? We've been here all week, those of us who have been here for the session, on this mountain. We have this building, we have other buildings, we have the mountain, we have the weather. We're sentient beings, we're constantly interacting with our world. The Buddha said the world is your mind, in essence. The world flows in. That's what it does. Flows in through our senses. And our mind takes those experiences and turns them into realities, or so we think. That's our part of it. And so how do we use our sentience, our senses, our space as part of the session? When we do session in the Zendo, as we normally do, the Zendo is a big part of the session, right? It's one of, you could say, it's one of the Sangha members participating in the session. And when we enter into this space over and over, as many as have done, some of us for many, many years, we create, I mean, to call it an association is weak. To even speak of it as karma, it's a kind of magic. It's something that happens within us, together with each other, but in this space, the space is part of it. And it's an active part of it. It's an alive part of it. There's something alive in this space that becomes alive in our minds, and that becomes part of our upaya. And so what happens then when we change that space just a little bit? Or we change the numbers or the people that are in that space, because we're all a part of it too. What happens when it's inside or outside? Because that changes something. Because in each of these situations, in all of these different factors, we're being influenced. Our mind is being changed in some way. And that becomes what we're practicing. And that's the way I have been thinking about this, and wanting to sort of experience intensive practice in these different ways. Hojin Sensei and I were talking at breakfast and finding it interesting that we'd expected to hear a lot about how the week was going in face-to-face, during open sozen. We didn't hear anything, really. So we were kind of hoping for some feedback, actually. So maybe that'll bring a little, but because one of the things is when we practice so regularly, like with Sesshin, every month for residents, for monastics, every month, and that regularity is part of the power, right? It becomes, you know, we talk so much about habits. Habits of mind that are that we get trapped in. You know, we try and break out of them and they keep grabbing us. We keep getting pulled in. And those habits are largely, that are born out of our lack of mindfulness, our lack of awareness. Oftentimes, if there's an intention involved, oftentimes it's not a right intention. To speak of the habits that we develop in training and practice, like sitting every day, studying, liturgy, reflecting on the precepts, living our lives as Dharma practitioners, being in the Zendo, doing Sesshin. Those are powerful habits, positive habits, because they're being born, they're coming, arising out of our mindfulness. We're making conscious choices. And the stuff of those habits is good. right? Everything about it is intended to be good. It's intended to be both in alignment with our nature, in alignment with the way things work, and intended to help us awaken our minds to that. So it's very different in that way. But when we sort of develop those habits, they can be so powerful, right? So that as soon as you hear the han sounding to call us to zazen, already the mind begins to settle down, right? Because we've built up this association. It's very powerful. You can do the same thing at home. It's important, actually, to do that at home, too. Not necessarily to have a han, but in the space that you sit, to the best of your ability. I mean, you could have a han if you want. We used to do the densho. This is a little digression, but we used to do the densho to end caretaking, to begin and end caretaking in the older days. And our neighbor in the Duchess Anne, there used to be an inn right next door. And she did not like that because her guests who were staying over would get woken up very early with our outside densho. So, but when these habits get established, they you know, set up currents within us that we can kind of tap into. And the intention of those is to take us deeper and to enliven us, but we can also begin to die in those, right? Because they become habitual. And there's the edge, right? How to take up something over and over again and have it be alive, you know, within us. And that's one reason it's, you know, that changing things up a little bit sometimes is helpful. And so we practice within these ways of practicing that have come down to us. You know, the wearing of robes, the burning of incense, the sounding of instruments. We relate to the world through our senses, through sounds and smell and touch. We relate to things visually, right? And so we have a lifetime of experience and association with just our t-shirts and blue jeans, right? Or whatever we might wear, and our name. And we come into practice, and if we enter into training, then we start wearing a robe, right? Something different. It, in a way, kind of unifies us. We're all wearing the same robe, more or less, right? If we take Jikai, we receive a teaching name. And we start to develop a relationship, an association, a life with these different elements. And they're imbued with practice. It's not just a piece of clothing. And all of that is intended to be upaya, right? And the edge of that is don't get hooked on it. Let it help our minds become extraordinary, but let it not become precious. In other words, let it not be just another source of attachment. In the woman con at the end of the Gateless Gate, woman has Zen warnings, and he says, to observe the regulations and keep to the rules is tying oneself without a rope. And yet to act freely and unrestrainedly, just as one wishes, is to do what heretics and demons would do. So we can get bound on either side. I'm just going to do what I want. That's my freedom. And then I'm bound to that. That's my identity. That's who I am. Or I'm bound to the rule. Right? And so everything has to be just so. And so training is in the middle way. It is to free ourselves. The faith mind says, when all things are seen equally, the timeless self-essence is reached. No comparisons or analogies are possible in this causeless, relationless state. To this ultimate finality, no law or description applies. And the Buddha, this started with the Buddha. The Buddha said, one of the ways that a student can get fettered is to the teachings themselves. And so collecting the causes, producing the results, completing the beginning, completing the end. But he says, face to face, there's nothing hidden. But then he says, but I've never explained. And if you ask me why all summer I've never given you instruction, he says, wait till you're awakened, and then we'll sit down and talk about it. Just tell me what to do. Right? And so beginning instruction can seem like that. Great. It's clear, succinct, I got it. Now I know what to do. Until you sit down to start sitting. And now you realize, wait a minute, you didn't, I need more information. Or I'm studying the precepts, I want to live a moral life, I want to manifest compassion. Well, what do I do in this situation? It's like going to a doctor who points out our illness. They're giving us compassion in that. They're giving us fearlessness because now we can face our illness. But we have to put ourselves in that doctor's office. We have to hear their words. And we have to begin to see and recognize what they see and recognize. And in that moment, things may appear to become more painful. Now I know something I didn't know before. And it's serious. And so there's worry. But there's a path. So here, Tian Ping came to Zhiyuan's place. And so he comes as, in the commentary it says, Tian Ping had once called on Master Zhiyuan because he had gone to various places and attained this turnip chan and put it in his belly. Turnip Zen, like potato Zen, or radish Zen, or pick your vegetable. Everywhere he went, he scornfully opened his big mouth and said, I understand, Chan. I understand the way. Don't say you understand the Buddhist teaching. I can't find anybody who can say anything clear about it. Another translation says, how could I say that I understand Buddha Dharma? I've looked and looked and never found anyone who can explain it. The commentary is saying he's speaking from a place of knowing. And so one day, Zhiyuan sees him and calls to him, Tang Ping. And Ping turns and looks at him. And Zhiyuan says, wrong. Then he takes a few more steps. And Zhiyuan calls out, wrong. And then he turns and starts to approach him. And Zhiyuan said, you know, just now, these two wrongs, were they yours or they mine? And Ping says, my wrongs. And Zhiyuan says, wrong. Turnip Zen. You know, the time we live in terms of Buddha Dharma is, I don't know what to call it. Interesting is not quite the right word. We have more Dharma available to us ever in terms of written videos, online courses, teachings, teachers, lineages, centers, apps. Does that mean there's more Dharma here than ever? Does that mean there's more Dharma practice here than ever? Does the proliferation of things Dharma mean that the practice of people will automatically and to the same degree be true? Historically, the answer is not quite. As is so with so many things, as something becomes far and wide, it becomes diffuse. Sean and I, on different days, offered some teachings and meditation to community members. It was put together by a local group of the Cornell Extension Agency that is part of, like, doing programs by the stream, by the Esopus, which is a major water artery. For all of you folks living in New York, you're drinking this water. You're welcome. But it's not my doing. We're all welcome. We're all grateful. And so they're just doing different programs to bring people stream side. So they want to do some stream side meditation. So we each did one. And so we're sitting right next to the Asopus. It was wonderful, beautiful day. And I don't know what you did, but we each did something. And we did teach some meditation, did some meditation. And one person said, you know, I have an app that I've used to meditate with, and it's sort of a guided thing, and you know, it talks and there's sounds and so on. Is that okay? Is that a good thing to do? And I said, well, what do you want from your meditation? What do you want from your meditation? I said, the answer to that question really depends on that. I said, in Buddhism, meditation, in a way, takes a lifetime to even understand what are we talking about with that word, by actually practicing and experiencing it. But also that it is because of the Buddha's enlightenment. And the Buddha's enlightenment was because of his meditation, in part. And then he taught, what do I do now? What do I teach that can help other seekers to discover this for themselves? What do they need to do with their bodies, with their thoughts, their words, their minds, their actions? And so I said, so in Buddhism, meditation has been is presented as a path to take you from wherever you find yourself in samsara to enlightenment. And it is intended, it's presented to you as a way that it will evolve with you as you evolve. That is your capacity to go deeper, to see more broadly, to see more insightfully, it will become more and more subtle. It will continually receive you wherever you are, no matter how far you go. That's what it's intended to do. For those who want that. See, that's the thing. So I said, so sort that out, and you'll know. But with such a proliferation, you know, I think just one thing, and as practitioners, it's good to ask, is that whenever we're with what we're studying, with particularly when we're talking about the Dharma, thinking about Dharma, feeling very clear about the Dharma, for koan students, doing koans, being passed on a koan, to just reflect and say, do I really know this for myself? Is this true for me? Do I know this in my own experience? And then, am I living this? Am I actually manifesting this to the best of my ability? Am I even trying to do that? Do I even know what that would mean? Those are honest questions. And that keeps us, I think, where we need to be, right? So Jiwan says wrong. The footnote says, even though he was told he was wrong, he says, still, he must have been tempered in a furnace before being able. Dada Roshi used to talk about the forging of a sword, right? You take this very rough metal and put it into the furnace and it gets red hot and softer, and then it's pounded, tempered, pounded, 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 then it goes back, and then it goes into the water, and then it goes into the furnace again, and there's this ongoing sort of forging, right? This strengthening and gentleizing, right? This making vital and this relaxing. Now, right and wrong, of course, is a very important part of practice. We need to know what is right and wrong. Otherwise, we can't guide ourselves in our practice. We can't know whether we're practicing or not. We can't really have faith in this if we don't have the sense that it is true, that it is right for us, to put it that way. We can't practice the precepts if we don't recognize what is right or wrong, what is skillful or not skillful, what is helpful or hurtful. We need to know the difference. And just like everything, that can be an essential aspect of the practice, and it can also be a place where we get stuck. It becomes dogmatic, it becomes fixed, rigid. And then the very thing that is in it to help us starts to hurt us. The very thing that we think we're going to use to help others begins to hurt them. Because we've, in a sense, in our mind, have turned it into something that it's not. And so ultimately, to be free, we have to see through and realize right and wrong, so that we can live in a world of right and wrong without becoming fooled. And so Tianping shows up wrong, takes a few steps wrong. And then Zhiyuan asks him a very good question: were these wrongs yours or mine? And Tianping is a good student. He wants to take responsibility. Oh, they were my wrongs. Of course, they must be my wrongs. You're my teacher. Wrong. And then Tianping gave up. And the footnote says, he doesn't know where to rest. He doesn't know where to rest. Zhiyuan has left him with no place to settle. He's just walking. I mean, if he had actually done something really messed up, and then he'd been told he was wrong, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about this. He wasn't doing anything, it seems. So how could he be wrong? It's a very tough thing about practice. When we experience any kind of pain, any kind of struggle, it hurts, it's painful, it's hard, and it seems like something is wrong here. Like when we're healthy and then we get sick, it's like, wait a minute, something's wrong. I'm sick. The sickness gets our attention. Now we can work towards gaining our health again. But what we do is we turn it into a wrong. It's wrong. I shouldn't be sick. I should be healthy. I've gotten a diagnosis of something. This shouldn't be happening. Why is this happening? I experienced some misfortune. This is wrong. Why is this happening? And within a world in which there are wrongs everywhere. But we create a wrong within ourselves. We become the wrong. We don't see something that just is dukkha, that is a habit that is no longer necessary or useful, that is not serving us, is not serving others. And we turn it into a wrong. And when we turn it into a wrong, we become wrong. Because that's what the self does. It appropriates. And when I am wrong, well, I'm kind of out of luck, right? What do I do about that? If I am wrong, that's what I am, intrinsically, then there's really nothing I can do about it, because that's just what I am. Now, most of us wouldn't subscribe to that if asked. Do you think you're fundamentally wrong? I think most of us, well, I don't know. You have to divulge that for yourself. But I think it would be hard-pressed to want to say, intrinsically, I'm wrong and there's nothing that can be done. Otherwise, why would we be here? But it can very easily feel, particularly without examination, that that is true. It's me, it's what I am, and that's just, as we would have said, I would have said growing up, I'm shit out of luck. And so Zhiyuan wants Tianping to be freed of his wrongs. He wants him to be freed of his turnip chan and to encounter it truly, directly. And then he gives up. He has no place to rest. Hakuin, in commenting on that, said when Zhiyuan asked him, are they your wrongs or my wrongs? And Tianping said, they're my wrongs. Hakuin said, what a disgraceful thing to say. Just what the hell do you mean by that? What the hell? Wrong. Wrongs from every side. Zhiyuan wants Tianping to be free and unhindered. Hakuin, many years later, wants the same for us. And so he creates another wrong. Dada Roshi used to talk about seeing a cage, you build a cage. Seeing someone who believes themselves to be wrong, you are so wrong. Seeing someone who believes they could never be wrong, you are so wrong. But then Jiwan says, well, why don't you stay for a while? Let's talk about these two wrongs. Hakuin says, calling from the side, because then I'm going to rip you to pieces with these two wrongs. He has a particular spirit. And the footnote says, Jiwan's spine is usually hard as iron. He's usually a very tough teacher. And here he's being so rolling out, come on, stay for a while, let's talk about these wrongs. But he immediately went away. Hakuin said, he left in disagreement. With whom? You know, in studying the precepts, sometimes when we talk about the 10th grade precept of not defiling the three treasures, students who are preparing to receive the precepts will often say, why would anybody defile the three treasures? Who is Jiang Ping in disagreement with? That would be a perfect moment to be in disagreement with the teacher, with the Dharma, with his place, with training, or with me. And wherever I direct it, it's just more wrong. It's more entrapment. Well, to say, well, wrong is empty, right? It's just upaya. Just blow it off. Don't care. Don't hear it. Ignore it. Wrong. That's not free. That's just a different kind of entrapment. When we are in disagreement, something is not clear. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the dis-ease of the mind. When the body and mind is disturbed, it's disturbed within some understanding that we have of everything, ourselves, each other, the situation, whatever's involved. But it's not a true understanding. Because when we're within true understanding, we're in accord. The situation can still be difficult, can still be all kinds of things. It doesn't control the world. But it transforms our way of experiencing it. Not just seeing it, but experiencing it. And so that's why in training, you know, we make the choice, the supreme choice, to enter in and to engage in what the training is being offered, in the training that is being offered, some of which we'll relate to and have an affinity with, some of which we might not, some of which will work for us, seem to work for us, some of which might not, some of which we'll like, some of which we might not. We'll be with Sangha members, some of whom we'll like, some of whom we might not. You get it. Likes and dislikes, opinions forming. To set up what I like against what I dislike. To know this, to know that. To stake my claim in being right or in being wrong. Somebody's working on Mu, and they come in and they know that they've seen it. And they haven't. Somebody else comes in and they know that they haven't seen it. And maybe they haven't. But maybe they have and they don't know it yet. It's the knowing that is closing the door in their face. And later, when Jiang Ping was at a temple, he said, when I was first traveling on foot, I was blown by the winds to Jiwan's place. Twice in a row, he said wrong. And he tried to keep me there over the summer to wait for him to deal with me. I didn't say it was wrong then, but when I set out for the South, I already knew it was wrong. I know what was going on. Another translation says, he thought we could talk through those wrongs, but I wasn't wrong. And I understood, even then as I set out for the South, why he said I was wrong. why is he still chewing on it? And so there are so many aspects of training in which we encounter that, some version of that. And sometimes it's something that needs to be addressed with a person, a situation, a relationship. Sometimes it just really needs to be worked with within ourselves. That's always part of it. That's never not part of it. But nobody's telling you which is which in those moments. How do we free ourselves? Does it come back to that question I said to that person at the Streamside Meditation? What do you want from this meditation? What do you want from this training? Do you want to be right? Do you want to be free? Do you want to be enlightened? Do you want to be ordinary? Do you want to not be? And so I have my own Zen warnings. It's not cool to practice the Dharma, to meditate and wear robes. Practicing the Dharma is not something you should be doing. It doesn't make you into a better person, a better lover, a better friend, a better worker, a better citizen. It doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't do anything to you. It doesn't begin outside of you and then become part of you. It doesn't make you better than people who aren't practicing. Enlightenment doesn't make you better than practitioners who are not yet enlightened. It's not right to do session. What is Dharma? We seem to have an insatiable appetite for attaching, clinging to things. That's why the Buddha said it is the heart, the basis of dukkha. And that our minds, our habitual workings of mind, is to take something, anything, and experience it as existing in its own right, in its own way, in its own state, in its own self. And now it's an object. And it's not me, but I might want it, or I might not. And so there's possessiveness. And you might want it too, and that's not really okay. So now we have a problem. Or I might not want it anymore, and so I put it where all the trash goes. You get the picture. And the profound, radical, perhaps, radically simple, radically primordial, radically natural, as in uncontrived, is that we have to deal with our inclination to just swing from one side to another. So if it's not cool to practice, then okay, I won't practice anymore. That's what you mean, right? If it doesn't make me a better parent or lover or friend or worker or citizen, then good Lord, why am I doing it? What is Dharma? This problem, this thing that we have, this penchant that we have for attachment, it's not new, right? It's not just me, it's not just you. Fortunately, Buddhism, Buddha Dharma, has such a deep, profound understanding and respect, you might even say. We should respect the power of our attachments, not in the sense of obeisance, but in the sense of recognizing and respecting how powerful they are. All of the suffering we see in the world, that's what it looks like. All of the stuff going on between people, that's what it looks like. All of the stuff going on within us, that's what it looks like. That's how it shows up. The early teachings say the very function of attachment is to make you suffer. That's its purpose. You know, it's like sitting down to a table and saying, we've prepared this exquisite meal for you. It tastes amazing. You won't want to stop eating. And it's designed to kill you. Bon appetit. Of course we wouldn't sit down to eat. In the poem, he says, he basically is talking about followers of Chan House like to be scornful. Having studied till our bellies are full, we cannot put it to use. How lamentable, laughable old Tian Ping. He's talking about this tendency. This is 10th century China. That it's always, it just comes with the territory. It's part of practicing as a person, as a community, as a sangha, that we can appropriate, commodify, objectify. Not we can, we will. I mean, let's just make it clear. We will. Let's make it clear. We do. Clear. We are. It's happening right now. It's not like, well, it might for some, but not me, or I can, you know, I'm better, I can avoid it. No. Because then it's like, okay, don't be surprised, but let's be alert. Let's know that that's the inclination of our mind, of everyone's mind. Let's really see that the function of our clinging is actually to make us unhappy. Because what we get on the surface oftentimes is a little kiss of happiness, right? And the Buddha said, yes, that's true. You have just been kissed. Now look for the danger. Look more carefully. Jiwan's pure wind suddenly melts him. That's what all of these wrongs is about, to melt him of wrong, into wrong. Ryokan, the great priest poet, said, when you know that my poems are not poems, then we can talk about poetry. When you know that they're not poems, now we can talk about poetry. What is he talking about? This great poet is not fettered by poems or poetry or being a poet. To observe the regulations and keep to the rules is tying oneself without a rope. To act freely and unrestrainedly just as one wishes is not freedom. When we know Dharma is not Dharma, then we can practice Dharma in the house of the Buddha. How do we make that real? By practicing the path of non-attachment and being diligent. I might even say vigilant. And cool about it. Cool in the sense of, because we do, because we are, because we will, don't be surprised. Don't make a fuss, but don't ignore. As Dogen says, don't add weight, don't take it lightly. What exquisite encouragement. It's all embracing. So,
thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.